Welcome to another edition of Blue Republican Radio with me, Robin Kerner, the original Blue Republican. Here we are, putting out the word for the Liberty Curious. And one thing, if you are a regular listener to this show, or indeed a regular reader of my articles, that you will know that I am banging on about all the time, is that we in the Liberty Movement get, I think, sometimes too hung up about the politics and think that all there is to play for is the politics, and we talk a lot about the latest bad idea that comes, you know, off Capitol Hill or out of the White House. And, of course, these things are important. We're also very passionate about the ideas of liberty, and we talk a lot about Hayek and von Mises and all these great guys, but we often miss the big piece. The big piece is that, as history shows, that liberty is always won or lost in the culture. The politics follows the culture. So I'm all about getting people who love liberty to understand that and make a difference in the culture. And that means, of course, being sensitive to the culture. And it also means being able to produce things that resonate with it. So I am particularly excited about this show. You know, one thing I'm kind of excited about generally is how varied all my guests are. But this time I have not just one, but two. So I think that's the first. Artists. I'm going to say true artists on the show. And they have a really cool project that they're working on. And I'm kind of excited, as, you know, here, Mr. Blue Republican, I want to be kind of on the ground floor supporting these two gentlemen. And hopefully in the course of this hour, you will discover why. Their names are AJ and Sean. I don't know much about them, so I'm going to let them tell you about themselves. AJ and Sean, welcome to the show.
Thank you very
much. Thank you, Robin. Good to be with you.
Okay, so let's just do what I said. Tell us, give us a little bit of bio for both of you.
Right on. Actually, would you?
No, you
okay,
start.
I'll get us.
Not only are the artists, they're really polite, obviously. They don't want to go first, either of them. Okay.
Yeah.
Pick one. Pick one and go.
Of course. Yeah. For us being artists, I mean, especially particularly animators, we like to kind of stay behind the scenes anyway. We hide behind our characters pretty often.
Just in front of the other guy while they're talking.
Exactly.
Okay. So, fair enough.
He'll take the other role, and I'll do that. So, yeah, my name is A.J. Viviani. I've been in the industry animating for several years now.
Now, hold on. You've got to back up, A.J., because I haven't told them what it is that you do yet. So these two guys, they're artists, as A.J. just mentioned, in the animation industry, and have done work for serious operations like Disney and Pixar, right?
DreamWorks and Warner Bros. Specifically, though we do have buddies that are there as well.
Okay, and the reason I have these two guys on the show is that they are putting together a movie with the kind of production quality that you expect if you go to the theaters and you see Disney, Warner Brothers, whatever movies. And this is a movie that's going to, in a rather nice, family, fun way, get an important libertarian message or two in under the wire of mainstream culture, right? So now I have introduced you a bit. So now, AJ and Sean, now people know why you're on the show. Go ahead.
Right on.
Now we're in trouble.
now our careers are ousted. That's all there is. No, yeah, so basically, you know, the two of us are animators. We actually met on a project in around 2007, 2008. I was working on a video game, along with Sean, called Splatterhouse, for the Xbox 360 and PS3 at the time. And, there was the housing crisis that had happened. And in that time, we both love animation and everything, but we found ourselves actually as sort of kindred spirits in asking, you know, what's causing this? What's up with the quantitative easing? What does that actually mean? And really found ourselves looking into those things. And basically, having worked in animation, I mean, my background comes from television, so I worked actually in, like, Christian television and video games. Sean's background is more in theatrical film. He worked on Shrek 2, and I'll leave him to catch you up on that. But, yeah, basically, that's kind of our background. We don't generally come into contact with other animators that, I guess, feel this way.
And when you say feel this way, you mean feel this way about the country, politics, liberty.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, you talk with people in general, and it's not to say that, you know, people are averse to the ideas. People actually love to converse with, you know, we do all the time with our fellow animators and people in our industry. It's interesting though, when you come across someone that you mention those questions and they kind of go, hey, you know, I'm interested in that as well. And that was basically Sean and myself.
Yeah.
So we thought we like, we're interested in economics and, you know, politics in general and the where those intersect. But basically, we looked into how can we take animation, which we enjoy, and this other interest that we have in economics and see if we can sort of fuse the two together. And basically, our film, Uncle Santa, which is a Christmas comedy, is sort of it exists in that vein.
Right, and I should say that the thing that kind of prompted me to get you on the show, you guys, is I saw the trailer for Uncle Santa. Now, if anybody wants to, maybe they're sitting in front of a computer now listening to this, they can go to YouTube and just type in Uncle Santa trailer, right? And that's Santa, S-A-M, as in Uncle Sam, and but Santa with a T-A, so it's Santa,
right.
S-A-M-T-A, as in Santa Claus, right? So,
right.
So Sean, yeah, let's over to you. Tell us a bit about you and a bit about the premise of the movie.
Okay. Well, I'll start from the way back of my animation career. I started out, I went to a school called California Institute of the Arts. That's where I really got into animation. And I had no kind of interest in politics. The only person I ever voted for was Ross Perot. I was like the one guy. And I really didn't, you know, kind of lean on one side or the other. I guess I would say I was kind of a conservative, which is interesting because most of my family are all super liberal Democrats, but I just wasn't really that interested in those things. But back to animation, I started out working on a television show for MTV called The Max way back in the 90s, and then I moved from there to Warner Brothers, and I worked on Iron Giant and a couple other features. I also worked on Prince of Egypt, and then I ended up moving over to Japan, and I lived over there for 2.5 years. That's where I met my wife, and I worked on a television series and also some commercials and things like that. That's when I started doing computer animation. I came back to the States. I worked on several films like Shrek 2 and a couple other 3D projects. And then I ended up moving out to Florida to work with some of my friends who were from Disney. And a lot of people probably don't remember, but around 2003, Disney decided to close their studio in Orlando, and they laid everybody off. It was like almost like a moment's notice. And some of my friends banded together and got a big chunk of Curious George and said, hey, you know, Springer, why don't you come out and help us animate Curious George? So I moved to Florida, and I've been here ever since. It's like AJ mentioned, around 2008, when the housing market started to go sour, I was here, and I had a two-year-old, and, you know, my wife wasn't working at the time, and all of a sudden I don't have a job, so I figured, well, I guess I'm going to have to make my way back out to Los Angeles, and so I started picking up freelance here and there, and to cut the story short, that's when AJ and I kind of met, and like he said, you know, we started talking about things like, you know, dude, what is this, you know, quantitative easing, you know, and this is BS. How, you know, they're giving all this free money away. I was thinking, give me some money. I need it for my house. You know, they're paying off the banks. And I didn't really understand how the process worked, the political process. I still don't understand everything about it. But then, you know, I knew there was something that wasn't right. And
it didn't pass the smell test, right?
Yeah. And I was listening to talk radio on the way to work. And the guy mentioned The Road to Serfdom.
Wow.
You know, it was actually Glenn Beck. You know, it was way, way back, and I didn't even know who he was, but I started listening to talk radio in the morning, and this guy, Glenn Beck, says, you know, he starts talking about Austrian economics. And then I was like,
wow,
that sounds interesting, The Road to Serfdom. So I looked it up on the internet, and I found a free version. It turns out I think it was from Mises. Didn't know what that was at the time.
Sure.
And I sat there and I burned right through. It was a real short read. It was an
yep.
easy read. And it was like, whoa. You mean that's, you know, and then that's when I started to kind of understand, especially with AJ, because AJ just dove into it. He was like, dude, there's this guy, Ludwig von Mises and all this stuff. And then it was just like this ongoing thing, and we would have lunches together and start talking about it.
It still is, of course.
This went on.
Yeah. Liberty never ends. Yeah.
It never ends.
And then one day, after work, we were sitting there having a pint, and we were joking about this idea, and we're like, you know, what is the one sector that is the holiest of the holy that the federal government, of course, would have no problem going after?
You know what? Stop right there, because we're coming to the end of this segment, and that is a great setup for the next segment. All right. We will be back shortly. Welcome back to Blue Republican Radio, and we closed the last segment with one of our guests asking a great question, a question that maybe many of us don't think actually has an answer. The question was, what's the one thing that the government can't or won't touch? Is there such a thing? Sean, carry on with your thought.
Okay, well, like I was saying about AJ and I, we were joking, like, you know, and actually in the real world, too, but what is the holiest of the holies? And especially to, you know, Americans, which is Christmas, you know, and what if they decided to go after Christmas and regulate it and tax it, and that's where the story kind of started.
Yeah, I mean, as it happens, I don't know if you're aware of this, but Santa has offshore accounts, and we need those dollars. So, and basically, you can see how very quickly some bureaucrat could come to that conclusion and go, well, you know, the economy, there's really nobody left to tax.
What's the one sector that's left?
Let's go to this guy that delivers toys, you know, once a year.
All right, so give us a synopsis of the movie. I'm hoping that my listeners have checked out the trailer. If you're listening to this on the archive, stop now. Go to the trailer, Uncle Sam's the movie in YouTube. Okay, 5 minutes. Come back. Now tell us what the story is for this movie that you guys are creating.
Sure. For those who have watched the trailer and I guess those who haven't, it is an animated Christmas comedy. The film is a rated G family comedy film, animated film for the whole family. The basis of the film is that Santa goes galt, if you like. he goes missing. The reason this happens is because, of course, a true-to-life Uncle Sam emerges and starts just taxing and regulating Christmas into oblivion, and ultimately just causes Santa to go, I just can't do business under these circumstances.
And the media demonizes him as some sort of jerk.
Yeah, the media has this narrative that they go into, and they're like, you know, who is this Santa guy? He's abandoned children everywhere. What a horrible person. And
He's abandoned children. Why? Because he can't operate under the state regulations, he just quits. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, but the public doesn't know this.
Yeah, the public has no idea why he...
Okay.
All they see from their perspective is Santa failed.
Right.
And all they're seeing is he didn't deliver toys this year. Well, so he's a bad guy, and it's all his fault, and he's a horrible person. It's sort of the...
It's a failure of the private sector. That's what we're seeing.
Exactly.
Right, okay.
They create a problem, you know, it's they break your leg and then they hand you a crutch
and
they say, and where would you be without me?
Yeah, who's right there to save the day? The federal government. Right. What do? They come in and they decide where they're going to give tax incentives to everybody who buy government-made toys, so they create a toy-based economy. So they start opening these things called fairness factories, and they start luring people out of the private sector with these crazy amounts of money, and of course they can pay that because they're just printing it.
Yeah.
They're just printing tons of money, so you have doctors, lawyers, dentists, leaving to go work in these fairness factories, making these ridiculous amounts of money, which is obviously unsustainable. And over time, the economy goes into a tailspin. And the last thing that, you know, our main character needs to do to maintain Fairness Day is to keep the charade going. And of course, the character.
Now, hold on, explain Fairness Day. So, Fairness Day, how does this fit in?
So, Fairness Day is actually Uncle Sam's replacement. It's a red, white, and blue alternative holiday to Christmas. Because Christmas has clearly failed, we need to have an alternative to that. So, he comes up with this Fairness Day holiday because it's fair. And I mean, you can't. How can you be against fairness? Do you hate children? Come on. So, basically, he kind of puts this out there as the alternative, so everybody is going into this. Of course, kids,
they
hate
want Santa
it.
Back.
They're just like, I just wanted Santa back. I wanted my toy, and that's all I really wanted. And of course, governments don't care what you want. If you like, you can look at our list that we have here, and there's three toys, and that's pretty much it. Half of them don't work.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's just they're kind of saying, no, we're looking out for you. This is really all you have to choose from, though, because, you know, there's no private sector anymore, right. And you can't get what you asked for. So that's sort of basically the dichotomy.
But the good thing is, too, because all the people that are making all this money, you know, what do they get to do? They can support the government by buying toy bonds, which
toy
actually
bonds.
Helps the economy.
Yes.
Yeah, toy bonds. Yeah. I love this. I like you. You're hanging it all together here. This is so good.
Yeah.
It's going to be a blockbuster, guys. This is good.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
And, you know, that's abundant, too, is, you know, since it's run in a certain way, they have, you know, if you're having a trouble, you know, buying bread or things like that, there's plenty of fruitcake to go around and eggnog. So
basically all you can
eat. That's all that's left.
And
because everyone's left. The farmers have left the fields to go work in fairness factories, so there's shortages all over the place.
Now, that actually is a good segue into the main character, which is this kid. It's
Miles.
This disillusioned kid named Miles. He's an orphan who, despite being good, didn't get toys one Christmas and decided after
because,
Santa disappeared.
Because Santa, gave up because of the regulations.
He's like, fine, you know what? I guess the ends justify the means or whatever. I'm just going to start doing what, you know, I'm going to start breaking promises like everybody else is.
Yeah, if I'm not getting presents anyway, then what the hell? Why be good, right?
Okay. Exactly. And and ultimately what happens is...
You're getting moral hazard in here as well. I mean, this is the whole nine yards. Okay, keep going.
Yeah. So what ultimately, or actually what the basis of what starts the snowball rolling, through a series of sort of centrally planned events, Miles, our main character, creates the means with which Uncle Sam comes to his orphanage, his very orphanage, which is supposed to be closed down by the IRS. And turned into a fairness factory, of course, because, I mean, what else would you do with the land? So it's an eminent domain, basically. And, of course, just as an aside, we're trying to do all of these things without going and saying those things.
Yeah,
you don't want to say,
you're not using
eminent domain,
buzzwords.
And, you know, hey.
Yeah.
They're so threaded important. Through the story without saying, hey, this liberty-minded thing. We don't want to preach to people. They're just story beats that happen throughout the film. So Uncle Sam shows up to this orphanage, and because the kid sort of pulls a fast one and gets Uncle Sam to agree to save the orphanage, it actually makes Uncle Sam look pretty good in the polls. And he's like, hey, this kid's pretty sharp. So he goes back to the kid and says, Miles, are you interested in becoming the poster boy for Fairness Day? And, of course, this kid is like, what else am I going to do? I might as well, yeah, celebrity, I can power, I can be the Fairness Day czar.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, I don't know if we'll go with the czar, maybe that's too heavy-handed, but... I mean, ultimately, he gets swept into this Washington Leviathan.
The inner circle, kind of.
Yeah, and the thing is, he's a very sharp kid, and he thinks he can play the game as well. And you can't kid a kidder on their home turf. You know, when he's bumping elbows with politicians, you tend to have a hard time.
Yeah.
And
he's outclassed.
He gets outclassed and ultimately sold down the river as the holiday starts to unravel. The Fairness Day holiday starts to unravel. It's his name. He ends up being the fall guy.
And he has, of course, good intentions in the beginning, but, you know, we learn through the story that the ends don't justify the means.
And the path to hell is paved with good intentions. Yet another.
Right. And our slogan or our tagline for the film is, the road to progress is paved with toys, which is a play on
I get it. You know, I'm loving this on so many levels. I mean, this is so up my street. I didn't realize when we started this interview that I was going to like this quite this much, because you're weaving, you know, you're really weaving it all there, and you've just got this lovely package to present it in a way that
a lot more.
You know, deliver into the minds of children. Because if we don't deliver this into their minds, well, we know what they're going to get filled up with otherwise, right?
So exactly.
Wow, this is good stuff.
Well, I'm a father. I have an 8-year-old son now, and AJ and I, you know, like I said, we talked about these things at great length, and kids don't really learn anything about economics or in civics class in high school here. Our public schools are terrible.
I never did.
I didn't either. I remember I had one class, and that was in high school, and my teacher, who talked about his diabetes the whole time, and he would eat blocks of cheese in class, and the guy was like 500
pounds. There's a movie there as well.
I remember sitting there thinking, obviously at the time I really didn't have much interest.
I gotta cut you off again because we're going into a break. This is great. We'll be back soon. Welcome back to Blue Republican Radio. I'm having too much fun doing this. I'm hearing about the cheese-eating diabetic teacher of one of the creators of what I hope we're going to make, maybe in the first big animated pro-liberty blockbuster that we've ever seen. So where were you going with the cheese-eating diabetic teacher there, Sean?
Well, that was my introduction to economics. And funny, but I think the only thing I actually learned in the class was the term economics. That's pretty much it. I was like, this is an economics. The whole time, this shows my age, I sat in the back of the class with my friend, and we talked about the movie Willow that was coming out that year. That was what this guy would draw. He was like kind of a D&D geek, and he used to draw the characters all the time. And that's what I remember about the class. The guy talking about the cheese that he would eat. He would bring in different types of cheese, big blocks of it. And then that was my economics
education. So Hazlitt had economics in one lesson, and this guy had economics in two lessons, which one of the two had to be cheese.
Yeah.
Okay, so cheese and Hayek. Between the two, you'll get it covered. When you were telling me your story about Road to Serfdom, I've got to say, I was kind of smiling a lot because it's so similar to how I got into this that it's strange, actually. I also was doing a bit of research, kind of motivated by the housing crisis back in 2009, and I discovered Peter Schiff. And
I was going to say that.
Okay.
Too. I saw the gateway.
He was the gateway. Yes. And he talked about Austrian economics. So I got on like Austrian economics. I never heard of it. And it was said something about libertarianism, you know, in the wiki page or whatever. So then I called my buddy, or I emailed my buddy, who I knew was some libertarian, whatever that was. And I said to him, okay, I'm interested in this thing that you've occasionally been talking about. What do I need to read? And top of his list was Road to Serfdom. And that was the book that did it for me. And, you know, and then here we are and the rest is history. So, isn't that amazing? God, if only Hayek could be around now to know that it really... And here we go again, right? Because here we have... it's still early days in a sense, but there is a political change going on in the United States. There's a shift in the zeitgeist. There's a kind of libertarian zeitgeist rising. And Again, as I'm always writing about, culture precedes politics. There are certain things that are available in the culture. Among let's say the more intellectual youth culture, the books of people like Hayek are right there. You know, people are, mm-hmm. you know, that isn't coming out of politics, right? That's already there. And so, you know, what you're doing, the way I see it, in kind of the big picture, is, I hope, if you're successful, something similar. You're doing something similar to what Hayek's doing, you know. It's the same message. And Hayek talks about the role of the intellectual in society. And, again, Hayek being one of those intellectuals, his work, super important. But it's the mainstreamers. You're the mainstreamers that connect the work of the intellectuals to everyday experience of the average, in this case, American, who isn't going to be reading Hayek and, frankly, isn't interested in economics. By the way, I have to say, if the only thing, Sean, that you said that you learned in your economics class was the word economics, then even that was wrong, because it comes from the Greek, economos. It's E, not E. So your cheese-eating diabetic teacher, he actually is zero for one, frankly. But anyway, I'm a writer. I hear these things.
No, that's
good. But anyway, so this is good. Is there any more to say about this movie? I'm already loving it. I'm already loving the idea. I just think there's not enough of the bringing of creativity to the message in the Liberty Movement. The Liberty Movement has been a lot of, it's changing now, I'm pleased to say, but actually old white computer programmers, right? That's what it's been. And there's these kind of rationalist, analytical, you know, why is it that if I make a logical argument about liberty, the rest of the world just doesn't understand? You know, it's this kind of, you know what, if you're animators, right? I guess to some extent you know, you have a sense of what it's about to resonate with an audience, and we need a lot more of that in the movement if we're going to succeed. Maybe we might not like the fact that we have to be savvy creative salesmen, but we have to be savvy creative salesmen because we're dealing with human beings. So anything else about this movie? Keep going with the story. Are we done with the story?
Well, I would say yes and no. One thing I did want to point out is this isn't like a treatise on economics. It is actually an action. There's a lot of action in the movie.
Okay.
Of course, there's Santa, and we have Libby, who is kind of the love interest. She's an intern that sparks his interest and makes him want to be a better boy or better man. You know, that's kind of what turns him away from his Miles, the main character, really kind of leads him down, you know, to look at himself and realize that some of the things he's doing isn't right.
I love it. So this is a basic human moral tale.
It's a sort of warning to those who think, maybe I can kind of get by, and as long as I have good intentions, it doesn't really matter what the actions are. And that's, of course, false. I mean, as we've said, the road to hell is paved with good intentions. So that's ultimately the undertone that we're trying to hit people with.
And one of the things, like I mentioned, I have a son who's 8, and I would like my son to watch, I mean, we watch animation all the time. There's a lot of great stuff out there. But you don't really see these kind of themes and stories for kids. And I think they're inundated now with Common Core and all these things that they're not taught. Like I was getting at earlier, I wasn't taught about economics. My son hears a lot of that stuff from me and AJ, but I would like kids to watch the film and understand, like, yeah, I remember back when I watched that movie when I was a little kid about printing money. Yeah, you can't just do that. You know, if you do that, it creates an imbalance. And then they might understand when they see people on TV talking about quantitative easing and bubbles and how you can't just print money. And, you know, it's like to realize there is a problem, you have to recognize it. Like, I didn't know what Keynesian economics was until I learned what Austrian economics was. Right. And I realized, you know,
they're conflated with this word capitalism.
Yeah. It's not capitalism. Capitalism is this, if you say the word capitalism, people look at you like you're some sort of evil person. And all it is exchange between people, trade. And if you teach kids that, then they realize there's nothing wrong with earning money. There's nothing wrong with keeping the fruits of your labor. And when there's somebody else out there who says, you didn't earn that, then you know that's, what does Ayn Rand say? That's the bellwether.
The leper's bell of the approaching neuter.
You know what? I'm going to plug it. I'm going to plug an article of mine at this point that I wrote a couple of months ago. Capitalism is progressive and must go on the offensive was the title of the article, and it makes exactly this point. You know, the word capitalism has been, I mean, it's used by, let's say, our opponents to mean something completely other than what it means. And as you just rightly said, Sean, it means free exchange. It means. You know, it's based on this notion of subjective value that you and I engage in a transaction because it benefits the two of us, and if and it doesn't hurt anyone else. That's another critical point.
Exactly.
That's the begin. That should be the beginning and end of capitalism. And we, it's important for us to get that.
And it's unfortunate and I guess tragic that it takes a little bit more than the superficial. Like if you say, okay, what is capitalism? And some people will define it as, well, this pervading system in America, that's capitalism. And you go, oh, okay, there's some people that will say that. Other people will say free markets. And it's like, okay, well, that would be, I guess, free exchange. Sure, subjective value and things like that.
Voluntary free
exchange. But the problem is where those two terms, like there are two definitions that – when somebody uses the term, they might be like, oh, I'm using definition two. Which one are you using? Oh, well, it's still both capitalism. So there's this conflation that happens. And unfortunately, most people don't like to take that second step to look at something past the surface. There's a lot of that has happened in science. Like, you know, the moon looks like it's the exact same size as the sun. And with science, you can figure out, actually, it's not the same size. It's just because it's closer, that it looks the same size. The Earth looks, I guess, you know, like it's flat. Right. But actually, you figure out, it's round. There's a lot of these things that people tend to just look at the surface and then move on.
That's right.
Minimum wage, things like that. They hear about it and they go, no, it makes sense that, we should raise the floor of wages and it'll help people. And they don't realize that it's more like a rung on a ladder that you're raising and they can't climb up.
And what you're talking about here is really the content of something else that I'm sure you both read on your journey to this position, which is the seen and the unseen. It's Bastiat. It's the law, right? Mm-hmm. It's the broken window.
Exactly.
The broken window fallacy. And I really hope that the overwhelming majority of my listeners have read this. But if you have not read Bastiat's The Law, go and read Bastiat's The Law. It'll take you, half an hour?
That's
an
a
hour.
Fast reader.
Yeah, this is what he told me. He's like, dude, you got to read. I still haven't read Hazlitt, but he's like, Bastiat and Hazlitt.
Yeah, for me, those were my two.
And when I read that, it was like,
cool.
So for me, I was Hayek and Bastiat. Absolutely. And good stuff. So this is great stuff. So here this is the cultural mainstreaming of what I guess we have to say, for the reasons you've just indicated, AJ, is not common sense, because common sense when it comes to civics and economics and politics and our basic intentions for society does seem to stop at the surface. It's uncommon sense, we might say.
Right. Yeah, is it Rothbard who said it's a dismal science?
Right. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, dismal science. Yeah, indeed. Okay, so is there any more about this movie? I'm just, every time you say anything about this movie, I get excited. There's
actually
more we need to know.
It's going to be pretty awesome. I think, just imagine a dogfight between predator drones and Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer with two kids
in tow.
Yeah.
Okay.
There's a lot of action sequences.
It's a G-rated movie, parents don't get scared. There's no gore, but there is some action.
And of course, some twists and turns in there as well. Of course, as you would expect with any thriller action,
It's very lighthearted.
But it is, of course, lighthearted and somewhat snarky.
Okay.
We definitely want to we want it to be kind of highbrow. We don't want to talk down to the audience because we do believe audiences are sophisticated.
Yeah.
And.
Like Sleepy Hollow, The Legend of Sleepy Hollow. I'm sure you're aware of that Disney short, right?
It was a Disney
featurette.
Actually, I haven't seen that, but I have heard of it, so I know nothing about it. So go ahead.
But if you read the story, I read it to my son recently, there's words that I have to look up in it.
And his waggish humor and prodigious strength. And like, this is for a kid. This is ostensibly for children. And it works, though.
Yeah, you watch it, and that
still works.
We always joked about that. God forbid that you have to open a dictionary and actually look up some words. This is what is, and kids will watch it and be entertained, and they'll hear the word. Yeah, they might not know what it means, but they'll learn something from it. You know, I remember watching things when I was a kid, watching cartoons and watching Legend of Sleepy Hollow, and I followed the story perfectly fine, but a lot of the terminology and the things that, you know, it makes you have to ask, and my mom would be like, go look it up in the dictionary, you know?
Yeah,
I don't think we have enough of that anymore.
You're so right. I mean, I it's wonderful to hear you say this. I mean, I you know, you can tell from my strange sounding voice and speech impediment that I am not from around these parts. And I thought the parts from which I come, which is obviously England, you know, that I was kind of coming out of an anti-intellectual culture, or at least a non-intellectual culture. And then I came to the States, and I was like, oh, how wrong was I? I mean, this is, you know, I'm I remember when I arrived, it was like, oh, I don't know, maybe about 10 years ago. And I, you know, the news. I mean, I know libertarians, et cetera, have issues with the BBC, but just in terms of quality of output, you can't compare the news on Fox or MSNBC to what I was brought up with. You know, on the BBC, you know, world news was actually, wow, about the world, you know. And I would come to the US and I would be starved for this. And, you know, and I actually started reading. This is really true. I didn't start reading the British press until I came to the US, first to California. And I would go to, you know, a bookstore, like a Barnes & Noble, and I would pull the English newspapers off, you know, they have the big Barnes & Noble will have, like, foreign newspapers. Just to, like, get some news, you know. And I'd have a coffee and then I'd leave, you know, that'd be it. So there does seem to be this huge kind of, you know, gaping niche, you know, and you think, well, and on the one hand, you think, well, the Fox and MSNBC, they're doing the easy thing. They're selling what their audience wants. Fine, but there does seem to be this gap. But now that I'm a writer, you know, and I go around giving speeches, and I certainly don't dumb down what I say for my audiences. I find that precisely because there's so little of this, of substance in our culture, if you provide it, there are millions of people who are so grateful, who are so receptive, who get so stimulated, and because it might not be the majority of, you know, the creative or intellectual or whatever market, but it's still huge. There's a lot of very smart people in the US, very intellectually curious people in the US. Mm-hmm. And I would even go further. I would say in the US, when it comes to politics and many things, Americans are on average more purposeful than the citizens of any other nation. That doesn't mean I'm going to agree with them. That doesn't mean I think that their purpose is necessarily a good one or a healthy one or well-informed. But there is this basic sense that it matters. It's something matters. Yeah. There's something to play for in this country.
I was going to say, when I lived overseas in Japan, Japanese culture is it's like the opposite of American culture. People are more reserved, and they don't shout their beliefs in your face. If you say, like, let's say I believe in something that's completely on the opposite of the person I'm speaking with, they're not going to say, oh my God, how could you believe that? You know, they're more reserved and more respectful. And I kind of did the same thing when I lived over there. I started reading more American publications, you know, the news, because I would see stuff on the news and I couldn't understand it. Okay. So it's like Clinton, it was around the Monica Lewinsky thing. Uh-huh. And at the time, I remember feeling embarrassed, like, oh my God, just let it go. It was embarrassing for me living over there. But that was, in a way, that was kind of an education for me, too, looking at things from the outside.
Right.
You know, and I noticed that there are a lot of people. It seems like, at least
we're
in
getting
my opinion,
we're getting into another break. I got to cut you off again, I'm sorry.
That's okay.
We'll be right back.
Following the point that Sean was making at the end of the last segment, I'm just going to do another plug. If you, like us, realize that there's more ways of looking at the world than just the American, you might want to take a look at watchingamerica.com, which translates foreign news and opinion and commentary about the U.S. from all over the planet. Sean, what were you saying there? You were just sharing about sharing your experience in Japan.
I was just kind of touching on how I noticed, being an American, that I noticed that a lot of Americans focus, they have like a hot button issue.
Yeah.
They have like, you know, the thing that they focus on, like whether it be abortion or gay marriage or what have you,
mm-hmm.
Instead of more of a well-rounded view. And it seems like they always chop at the branches, but they don't look at the root of the problem. When if it's something like, let's say gay marriage, why not just get the government out of marriage, period? And we say things like that, they look at you like, you're crazy, you know?
Yeah, really. And what you've described there is really the kind of the bane of the liberty movement as we try and persuade people. That's kind of our meta problem in a way. Now, look, we only have a minute or so left to close the show. So, gentlemen, what if the listeners are turned on by what you're doing, as I am, where do they need to go? What do they need to do? And how can they support this effort? And as I say, we're down to the last minute.
Right. I'll be brief. If people go to YouTube, you can check out our Uncle Samta movie there. If you just type it in, you can go to UncleSamtaMovie.com, UncleSamtaMovie.com. There we do have some donations that like little perks and things that people can purchase, some swag, as well as we have our P.O. box as well. People have reached out to us recently and they just wanted to write a check in support. So we're, of course, gracious for any and all support to help get this movie out there. Even just spreading our video around, if you check it out on our YouTube channel and just push it to people and see what they think, that actually helps us quite a bit as well, just getting some hits on the video. So we're just trying to, at this point, get this project funded. We're actually in talks with some agents of some celebrities right now that we can't actually talk about at this point. But
one more thing I was going to start.
Yeah,
there was actually a very nice article written about us on BenSwan.com. I think it's still up.
Excellent.
Yeah.
And, of course, as a writer for BenSwan.com, I will push people towards that. That's the end of the show. AJ and Sean, thank you. You're awesome. Good luck.
Thank you, Rob.
We'll be hearing
thank
more
you.
Of you, I'm sure.
Definitely.